Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. Welcome everyone to a very special episode of Brainstorm Brewery. We're here at episode 100. Actually, no, we're not. Episode 100 is going to be so epic. It's taken me 2 weeks to edit the cast. Tune in next week for episode 100. Right now, we're going to bring you a blast from the past. This is episode 39, Raw and Uncut. This is my personal favorite. I just like the way that the show flowed. It just, to me, was like one of our pinnacles. We had good episodes after that, but I like this episode a lot. So if you haven't heard this before, tune into this one and check us out next week for episode 100. It's going to be a big one. Your show notes.
They're up.
Come on, Oki. You gotta link them, man.
Oh, God.
Yeah. You can't just make them. They're on my computer screen. I can say it.
Find it. It's in the chat.
Hang on, guys. What's your fax machine number?
Hold on. I gotta write this down. That will be part of the cast.
What will be part of the cast? My crack about the fax machine?
Yeah.
Hey, should be the beginning of the cast.
Or when it was, somehow it's going to get fit in there.
Fair. So I was like, I'm going to make that shit happen.
So I just bought some dude's like standard Esper deck. So now I have a bunch of cards here that I want to hold on to, but I also want to sell and get my money back in. What do you guys think I should do with Jace and Sorens and Mages?
I would sell those Jaces. Is it Architect of Thought?
Yeah.
Ugh.
I know.
I don't know what that card's future is.
I know. I already sold the memory add-ups. I mean, I didn't get a great price on it, but I got a fine price. But I like, there's seven here I know I want to hold on to, but I'm not going to have my money back until I do eventually sell. But like, if the Jaces and the Supreme Verdicts and like fucking Deathrite Shamans, I feel like I should just keep.
God, Deathrite could hit 20 soon.
And the Hallowed Fountains, I feel like I should keep. Maybe I'll find someone to buy this playset of Marsh Flats. Did you guys see what happened to Huntmaster?
Did it fucking triple again?
It's like 35, right?
Star City update, yeah. Star City up is out of stock at 30.
Jesus Christ. You know what that is? That's Jund players going, oh, if we just jam Huntmaster, we don't have to build a new deck.
What?
Everybody knew that. But yeah. Everyone wanted to believe that wouldn't happen.
I mean, it's 27 on TCG, Huntmaster is.
What good cards are there in Modern that are like, make you draw and discard?
Faithless Looting.
Yep, and is it Charm? Isn't there another one?
Ravings.
Drowned Rusalka.
Desperate Ravings.
It's pretty good, yeah.
Why? What are you trying to do?
I have a deck.
He's trying to
combining everything that I love about Magic and everything that everybody else hates.
Like one combos, super
land destruction. Land destruction's my favorite thing.
No, it's not. It's not land destruction.
Well, land destruction's my favorite.
Yeah, nobody cares.
I like land destruction quite a bit too.
Yeah, nobody. You think either?
Nobody cares because they haven't printed a 3-mana LD spell since Cold Snap, and they never will again.
They will eventually, once they get Land Creep.
Land Creep. Oh, yeah, you made this deck up, Ryan. I wish I was this creative.
I did make this deck up.
I know, right? I've literally never seen Goryeo's Vengeance or Fury the Horde played before.
Yeah, okay, look at the rest of the deck.
I'm looking at the rest of
this list. What are you guys looking at?
It's in the show notes. Or in the... I guess it's not in the show notes. It's in the...
The chat window, the other chat window.
What is Dimir Infiltrator?
Dimir Infiltrator costs a blue and a black and has whatever.
Transmute,
yeah.
Okay. So what?
I don't see it. What am I not seeing?
To find your vengeance and your
heart. It finds everything. It finds Graveshot, Heartless Summoning, Goryeo's Vengeance. It finds, like, Dimir Charm.
Why is there no Imrakul in this deck?
because how would, how are you getting Emrakul?
Goryeo's Vengeance.
But do you understand how Goryeo's Vengeance decks work?
Yeah, with Goryeo's Vengeance trigger on the stack, you play Goryeo, or with the Emrakul trigger on the stack, you play Goryeo's Vengeance.
Because I'd rather win the game than just deal him 15.
15 and take away 6 permanents usually wins the game.
That's Ryan logic right there.
Nobody,
yeah, but then you don't have a fucking Emrakul on like how you're supposed to kill him.
Yeah.
I would actually rather swing with Grizzlebrand and just kill him that turn.
I would rather just kill him.
But you play both, and if you have the Grizzlebrand, you get to draw your deck and do
it. No, you play Grizzlebrand and Boborygmos. Don't you understand?
I mean, that's better.
You play Grizzlebrand and Kyurgo. Mirror Retriever, Heartless Summoning is an infinite combo, and you just play a Grape Shot and kill them.
God damn it, Ryan.
The deck is bad. It's supposed to be a joke, but I don't care. I'm going to play it. I'm playing BTQ with this deck. It's all the combo all the time.
I want to play that Fury of the Horde deck. I want to play some manner of Fury of the Horde deck in
Mirror Retriever. Mirror Retriever, Heartless Summoning is actually pretty funny.
Right?
I mean, it's a turn 4 kill if you draw 3.
Turn 4.
Because when you like do it on turn 3, you don't have mana to cast your Grape Shot.
Heartless Summoning on 2, free Mirror Retriever on 3.
Oh yeah.
3.
Oh yeah.
Plus 0 manas. Yeah.
It's a 3 mana. It's a 3 card. Yeah, make fun of me.
It's not a merfolk. Corbin doesn't understand how.
Your 3 card. No. Deck manipulation.
Ryan,
there's plenty of deck manipulation. Are you smoking crack? I have Dimir Infiltrator in there, which finds all of your combo pieces. You have Is It Charm, you have Faithless Looting, and Desperate Ravings. So shut up.
Serum Visions.
Serum Visions eats dicks.
Serum Visions instead of if that's your combo, then fuck Fury of the Horde.
No, play them both.
Yeah, why not?
Because I don't see room in your list to, play Serum Visions without cutting something important.
You cut Desperate Ravings.
Yeah, you could do that. That would be better.
I don't think Serum Visions is better than Desperate Ravings.
I think it is, because Desperate Ravings is random.
Desperate Ravings costs a lot of mana. And if you're trying to reanimate something, you need to, set that up cheaply. So, if you're trying to Desperate Ravings and Gore's Vengeance, you need 4 mana.
Okay, there you go.
5 or whatever it is. So it's
the fact that you're thinking about this deck at all makes me happy.
Sure, I mean,
we've actually been recording for an hour. Do we want to just wrap up the podcast?
What is there to talk about this week?
We need to talk about
the shit we've been talking about for the last hour. We've actually gone through
League of
Peace. We've actually done an actual podcast. We talked about the lands in Dragon Maze and the effect of that. Corbin asked about what he should do with the shock lands.
Wait, Fiddlesticks
about a deck. We actually did a fucking podcast and didn't record it.
Fiddlesticks.
Oh, we did record it.
Okay,
we're done then. Can I go to bed?
We could just do this and I'll piece it together and be like, this is the podcast. I'm serious.
This sounds miserable for you.
It's not horrible. It'd be a little, actually not that bad.
Well, do we want to at least let's at least talk about each subject for 5-10 minutes so you have actual coverage in case we forgot one.
This is record then. Let's do it.
Okay. Let's just fucking record this show. Cause we still have to do our picks and stuff too.
Yeah. Alright, do it.
Jason, you gotta do an intro. It's about fucking time.
We got a good intro recorded. It's me making fun of Corbin for being a fucking Okie.
It's not the intro of the cast. This is the intro.
Don't we just usually smoothly segue in? The music fades out and then it fades in on Ryan saying something about his penis.
I've got a good intro.
Alright, let's do it.
Because I would just tell a story about the time I got Ryan to buy some Wilford Brimley shoes.
Dude, those shoes are fucking baller.
Anyway, so welcome to the podcast. This is episode 39, also known as the one where Ryan owes Corbin Fogo.
Oh!
Until June.
Ouch.
Wow. I didn't think he would Fogo there.
He went there early and fast. Episode 33, there was a bet.
Marcel remembers the episode number.
I did not forget.
That's some high quality MC action there, Marcel.
Actually, I won't lie. I forgot and just remembered earlier today when my wife and I were talking about dinner. But I remembered.
I mean, everyone has been going on about Jace, but I don't think that's happening.
It is happening. Jace is getting unbanned. I will make a bet with you right now if you want.
When's he getting unbanned?
Somebody listens to our podcast. Could you keep track of all the bets?
You do get Fogo. However,
Ryan remembered too, because
There's a roadblock in the way. The roadblock is a bet that you just can't win.
I'll bet you Fogo on that.
I will bet you Fogo.
Your restaurant.
Biggest ever? That's what you said?
Yep,
biggest ever.
I would not take that bet. It ain't going to be the biggest ever.
Shut up. But Ryan's take that bet. Fogo.
I can't lose either at this point. Like, the worst I can do is break even.
Right. I agree. Which means that we just have to go to Fogo, which is
We do have to go to Fogo twice. Which
for those who don't know what we're talking about, Ryan and I made a bet on Jace being unbanned in the next announcement. And I bet that it would stay banned because I think Wizards doesn't want $200 cards in Modern. Ryan thought that that was somehow good for people entering the Modern metagame. And so we made a bet. That wasn't mischaracterized at all, right?
No.
I don't know. I don't think Wizards is keeping Jace banned because it's $200. I think they're keeping Jace banned because it's Jace.
Yes.
I think they're keeping Jace banned because they banned Bloodbraid Elf.
Well, that, yeah.
Yeah, Bloodbraid Elf.
They just put the nail in the coffin and said Jace won't be unbanned. Right. Really what happened.
With Syrian Song. Syrian Song got banned.
Yeah, Seething Song was preemptively banned. We're just done with combo completely. But I've got it. It's okay. We've got some combos left. We've got some combos left that they have not banned, which include Heartless Summoning Mirror Retriever, Storm Combo, and Goryeo's Vengeance, Fury of the Horde on Grizzlebrand.
These are
all
the
Storm Combo decks.
Hooray!
Oh, there's also that stupid Pod Combo deck, like that's whatever, nobody cares about that. And Splinter Twin, I guess, is kind of combo.
Yeah, man. Splinter Twin is kind of combo. It's the definition of combo.
Yeah, those aren't fun. Nobody cares.
And what's much better is to put two totally different combos into one deck and hope that you draw the right pieces.
Yes. Actually, it gets there.
That's my PTQ plan.
I mean, I think the deck is probably fine.
I think you're probably wrong. It's probably terrible. But
I mean, both halves of your combo rely on the graveyard.
So you guys remember, I was big on that Fury of the Horde combo a few episodes ago. Marcel will know the exact episode number, I'm sure, but... I was talking about, like, I really like that Fury of the Horde. So, Smitty, who you may remember as a guest on the cast, Marcel will remember the exact episode number of that too, said he was brewing with Boborygmos, actually, along with Grizzlebrand. I think that is too good not to brew with, because I think Boborygmos actually is probably the most fun way to win the game in that situation. If you can draw a bunch of Grizzlebrand and then just like, how much fun would it be to discard four lands and just nail somebody to death? That would be so much fun.
I'll give him this. He's got one of the best names for the deck I've seen.
Is it Rumbly and by Tumbly?
That's pretty good too. No, it is Gristle Bros.
Gristle Bros.
Really?
I don't know.
That's a good deck name?
I think it's alright. No, I don't think it'll catch on because I think it's a bad deck.
I think Bubbles Revenge.
You shut your mouth. He took something I liked and he made it even better. How could that be
bad?
What
if you just call it why would you call it Gristle Bros? Why not like Bo Bros or something like that?
Broborygmos?
Broborygmos. Yes.
Smash Brothers? Broguan Cabrobi?
There he goes.
Oh. You can make a Corbin will add some Merfolk to the deck and call the deck Brisside and Lord of the Broshen.
I do enjoy saying that to people. All right, let's talk about something real. Let's talk about some Shocklands.
Hold on. Before we start, we got to do our calls of the week.
All right, well, calls of the week. We're just teasing you about the Shocklands and Dragon's Maze.
No, actually, I'm going to steal that. That is my call of the week. Dump your fucking Shocklands.
Yep, I'm with Ryan. Dump.
Corbin disagrees, but I think he's crazy. I don't think you need to dump them immediately, but I would not be looking to hoard them for the next 6 months. Let's put it that way. Dragon's Maze. I mean, if you've read the announcement, they announced that there would be a land in each of the packs, including the Shocklands. And although apparently they said that there will be a quarter of what there would be in each other box, this will still be a very drafted set, I'm sure. And I can't imagine the prices aren't going to drop, so I can't really see holding on to them.
So Corbin made a pretty compelling argument, especially when it came to Breeding Pool, because Breeding Pool would be... What was your Breeding Pool argument, Corbin?
It was all small sets.
It was so compelling, I forgot it right away.
Breeding Pool
would be the only one that would be in both small sets, yeah.
Well,
that's right.
Gatecrash is in a small set, but yeah, it would be in the second set.
And Gatecrash, he said, was going to be underdrafted.
It would get drafted for less time. Yep, so I thought that was pretty good. So I actually was trying to pick up some breeding pools at the pre-release, and then they made this announcement. And I know Corbin might not change his strategy, but that definitely gave me a little bit of pause. I don't think I want to be hoarding shocks going into the future.
I mean, I don't want to be hoarding any gate crash shocks because they obviously need to come down to return to Ravnica level prices first. But
so we think if they hadn't made this Dragon's Maze announcement, you think that number there would be 9-ish? Because that's about what we've seen on the RTR stuff is about 9-ish.
In 3 months or whatever, when Set Redemption starts to hit, 2 months, whatever that is, I think they would have come down to 9 or 10, maybe a little higher than the RTR sharks because they aren't a sealed PTQ season format. But yeah, they would come down to 9 or 10. They would have been a great pickup. Now here, I'll go ahead and give my spiel on Dragon's Maze. So they said that you are one quarter as likely to open up any particular shock in Dragon's Maze as you were in its corresponding set, either Return to Ravnica or Gatecrash. Okay? So that means, for starters, that, you know, if we assume the original supply of what we have now is a 100%, you know, 100% of the shocks, 100% of the Hallowed Fountains in Return to Ravnica, okay? That's what we have now. If we assume this set will be opened the same amount as Return to Ravnica, which it's probably in all likelihood to be a little less open because it's not a sealed PTQ format. So that's maybe 15 to 20% since, you know, you take the baseline of your 25% is likely to open a particular shock, and then you take away a little bit since it won't be drafted as much, and, you know, maybe 20% is a safe estimate there. So that will add 20% to the market. So then you have 120%, okay, so then you of that would cause the price to go down 20%. In which case, I like picking up Hallowed Fountains instead of the $10 right now. I like picking up at 7 or 8. 7 or 8. You just take the 20% off of it. And I still think it's a good investment going forward. I think the Dragon's Maze announcement makes you decrease the price you want to take them in at. And I think it decreases the ceiling of the card by 20% or so in the future. That still doesn't mean it's not a good investment.
Yeah, and I agree. Because these cards, I mean, this is still going to be the cheapest that they'll ever be. And bar them from being, you know, reprinted in Modern Masters or something like that. Like, you're probably not going to see another reprint of the shocks again because they did such a flux of this right here.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's like, I said this on Twitter today, price doesn't matter. All that matters is supply and demand, and right now, the price is what it is. It doesn't matter if it's $10, it doesn't matter if it's $100, it doesn't matter if it's $2. Okay, the price is what it is. All you have to look at is the price is going to come down this percentage because this percentage more will be added to the market. And then the ceiling on the card will be that percentage less. That's all it is, and it's still a good pickup.
So you're, on average, going to open about 3 shocks per box, then?
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah. Sure. I don't know the math on boxes.
Well, because, I mean, you're opening, like, what? On average, about 6 shocks, like, between 5 and 6 shocks right now per box? So it's going to be about 50%.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Because not 25% because you, no, it's any particular.
No, it's 25% of one particular shock because.
Right. But you have to remember that when they say one particular shock, because there's twice as many shocks in the set as there was before, so you have essentially a 50% chance of opening a shock.
Yeah.
That's where your number is getting skewed, Corbin. So
I don't think so, because it doesn't matter how many shocks you open, it matters how many of each shock you open, right? So.
No, but what I'm saying is, okay, what they're saying, you have, say you have, you know, like a 1 in 40 chance of opening a breeding pool. So they're saying you're going to have a quarter of that chance, so you're going to have a 1 in 160. However, you're not actually going to have a 1 in 100, or sorry, yeah, you're not actually going to have that because it's going to be doubled because there's twice as many shocks in the set. So you're still going to have a 1 in 160, but you're going to have 160 times 10, not 160 times 5. Like, that's where you're not actually getting, like, a quarter on each one.
I'm with Ryan on that. I think the best thing about the Shocklands right now is their spread is ridiculous. Now, if you guys don't understand what I mean by spread, that's one metric I use to evaluate whether a card is a good pickup. It's basically the difference between the buy price for buy lists, depending if you're using that as an out, and what the retail price is. So the spread is actually sort of ridiculous in your favor right now because the shocks were retailing for 9-ish, but buy lists were buying them for 6 or 7. So if you traded out, you know, 2 $5 cards that were on the buy list for $2, you know, for a quote unquote retail $10 shock land that you could get 8 cash for, you just doubled up, trading straight across the board. That is actually ridiculously easy to make money on those, and I think that's really going to hurt the spread because the increased supply out there is, this whole price is based on perception. And so if a dealer could hypothetically pay $6 for it, but they've got a case full, they might not buy it at all. They might not say, oh, well, we'll reduce our price 25% because there's 25% more out there. They might say, look, we've been buying these all day. We don't need them anymore. So that's another thing that you got to consider is once people get, they're going to get full faster. And once they're full, they're not going to want that stuff at all.
But it's not going to really be like there's that much more. Because if you think about it, Dragon's Maze is only one additional pack. It's a small set. They're adding one pack to the draft. They're still going to open up a Ravnica. You're still going to open up a Gate Crash. Those have their own set of shocks in there. So those are already two sets, two chances to get there. And then you have this other pack that has a lower chance to get a shock land, which is probably the same that when Ravnica was triple pack drafted, when Gatecrash is triple pack drafted, the same amount of odds and shocks. It's actually a little bit less than those two draft formats. So the impact is so negligible. It's like, I don't think it's going to be there. What it's going to do is keep the bottom of the price is going to stay bottom for longer now through till gate to Dragon Maze. And then you're going to start to see the upcline. But is this going to be, this is going to be a longer period for you to pick them up at a lower price.
Although I agree with you in regards to Moto on that, because like that's how most of your products open is through limited. I mean, in the real world, although most people assume that, you know, most product is open through draft and stuff because that's what you see in your like local shops, that's not the way casual players work. They don't buy a box and go draft with their friends. They buy a box and they crack it. And that's what you're really coming out to is like, how many boxes, how big of an appeal is this to the casual market? If Dragon's Maze is a home run for the casual crowd, shocks are going to tank. If it's a mainly competitive format, then I could see shocks holding some value. But I don't know.
I just can't agree with this. I mean, we don't need to go on and on about it here. I guess we'll find out.
You want to make another FOGO bet about it?
you guys have to stop making bets. Like, I don't even want to go to FOGO that often.
Yeah.
We're already going twice.
We don't even have to go once, actually, technically, if I win the next bet.
You just want to cancel each other out? No, I want to go to FOGO twice. I think that's the play.
No, go St. Elmo's or Sushi Club.
Can you make your next bet on Sushi Club, please? That would be awesome.
I thought Corbin didn't like fish. He's from Oklahoma.
Well, good. Then he's going to be real rub-ins because he'll have to pay for food he doesn't even like.
So let's rub in some picks of the week. Hopefully
no doubt. All right, so mine was shocks.
No. You can't pick that as a pick.
All right. Pick. Dang it. You stole it. All right. Go ahead. I got to think of a new one.
Well, my pick was going to be Boros Reckoner, like we talked about, you know, last week. And I think we've all tweeted or written about all of that. But now Star Cities raised their price on it to $10 because everyone else caught on too.
Yep. So,
dump it.
You listened to us last week.
Dump it $10.
$10. It's a pickup at $10. It'll hit 20. Now, I think $10 is probably the ceiling. I think it'll probably come down a bit, regardless of how much it gets played, but because it's a non-mythic, but I really like the card. I think everybody that wants them is realizing they want four, so.
And is angry that they're $10.
Yeah, I'm angry that they're $10. I want them to be $10 when I had 100 of them. I wrote about this, but I still think my logic here is pretty sound. Spellskite, for two reasons. They banned two cards in Modern, one of which is Bloodbraid Elf, and the other of which is Seething Song. So what that does is that makes Jund a little less attractive. It makes Boombust Naya not a deck, unfortunately. It makes Corbin's Allies deck not a deck. Suck it, Corbin. That's what you get for not brewing with Merfolk. And it makes Storm not a deck. So with Storm gone, I think the red-blue combo wannabe players are going to probably play Twin, because they've got most of the deck together. They got the land base and all that. And Twin's a pretty, it's not really a similar deck, but it's probably the combo deck that's gonna move up to, take the place of the Storm deck. So I think, Spellskite is quite good against the Twin deck, because they can't target their dudes if you've got the Spellskite out to go off. Now, I also think, it's a possibility that's been bandied around on Twitter. I think a Doran deck could emerge. I don't know how, because Doran's obviously not really playable in Modern right now as a deck. But with Bloodbraid gone, really your main reason to be in red is Lightning Bolt at that point, or maybe Terminate. But if you don't want to have the red, you don't have to splash the white for the Lingering Souls. You just play junk colors, and Doran's a possibility. So Spellskite actually is really good in the Doran deck because A, you board him in against Twin, but B, he's a 4-4 with Doran out. So I think those two factors. What?
That does not have Defender.
Yeah,
I think Spellskite's a really good pickup too. Also, the fact that
factors like I'm really hedging because I'm like, well, there are two possible ways this could go up. So I don't know that Doran's a good pickup. I had the opportunity to pick some Dorans up before they, you know, saw a little bit of a price jump based on people figuring that Junk could be a thing with Jund weaker. But I think that Jund is just probably going to jam Hunt Master and say, look, I didn't have to build a new deck. So Doran might not ever emerge, but Spellskite has two chances to go up. So that's why I think it's a pickup. And they're around 350 right now. So, like, you can't lose at 350.
Yeah, and Spellskite's already played, and it's from, you know, New Phyrexia. It's a third set, small set. Like, all the conditions are right for it to see a pretty large jump.
So, let's see. My pick of the week is going to be, I guess, Master Biomancer. Even though he's a $10 card right now. Actually, that's not a pick of the week. I don't have one.
$10. See, now, Marcel, for your pick week, I think you could actually just spend the whole time gloating because I actually saw Counterflux in the sideboard of that red blue modern deck that I really like. So you could probably just get away with saying, I told you guys pick up Counterflux. And I can't speak for everybody listening to the podcast, but I know I didn't. And
I accidentally picked up a bunch in bulk because there was a kid who collected them.
Well, if my pick of the week, I'll just come back with some good cards to maybe trade for is Blind Obedience, Dami Raid. Dami, I'm actually now a fan of him now. And Master Biomancer, even though, you know, I'm sure the prices are going to drop. But those three cards are very powerful, and they are going to be major players in the new standard. So,
well, since I don't really have a pick of the week because Shocklands apparently don't count, I'm just going to take this chance to gloat because, I called Dami Raid before, like, anybody. I love that card the moment I saw him, and he's amazing. Another card that I am liking more and more that we've been testing a little bit is Assembled Legion. We didn't really know how we felt about this card at first, but the more I've seen this card see play in some of the decks that are trying to jam it, which are more like mid-range control decks, like kind of like your American control, you tap out for this guy like a Planeswalker, more or less, except he's a Planeswalker that doesn't die as easily. And blocks itself, so I mean, it doesn't say anything you want a Planeswalker to do where it just produces a token to block, but it gets to a certain, like, threshold where you can wrath through it, and then the next turn it just starts killing your opponent. And, the more I see this, like, you know, fitting into those mid-range decks, the more I like it. You don't get the ability right away, which is the big difference between that and a Planeswalker. However, if it gets to stay on the table for even three or four turns, you're probably winning the game.
So is this a better Blossom in your testing?
It's a very different thing than what Bitter Blossom does. Bitter Blossom is trying to race your opponent. Like, you're never wrathing through a Bitter Blossom and then like, haha, now I'm gonna kill you.
I got one token. Yeah, with Assemble right. Legion's out for
Assemble
like
Assemble the Legion because you like, get a new token every time.
Tokens.
Yeah. Once you get like if you wrath and you have four counters on it, you tick up to five next turn, put 5/1/1s into play. If your opponent played a guy, you can afford to swing with four of them and leave a blocker back, deal them 3 damage. And then next turn you get to produce, you know, 6 tokens. It's not like it produces 1 extra a turn. It produces 5 or 6 extra a turn.
I like how you said we weren't the really sure about that because I was all over this card.
Well, I mean, none of us really wanted to commit to it, though. I mean, we all thought it was good, but nobody was really like, and I'm willing to commit to it. I think this card is going to be very good. I don't know that it's going to be to fit into enough decks to really give it a huge price increase, but I think there will be a couple of decks that run it as a 3 or 4 of. And most of them will be these mid-range controllers.
Literally my reservation was, does this have a home? There's the obvious, like, is, you know, getting your first token on turn 6 all that good? But if you can ramp to it, that obviously mitigates that a lot. But
the deck that we're really running doesn't even ramp to it.
This could be a good card that doesn't have a home. So I still don't know if that's the case, but I'm glad it is as good in testing as it was in my wildest dreams looking at the card.
Yeah.
And anybody played the pre-release and had this played against them, like, understands how you have to scramble for removal immediately because it's that terrifying.
Enchantment that removal.
Yeah.
Where do you find enchantment removal?
And Detention Sphere is not seeing enough play like, for this to get blown out by that. It doesn't die to Abrupt Decay. Like, it's just, it has a lot of plus sides going for it. But we weren't even ramping into it. You just, like, you get to a point where, you know, you clear out a couple of creatures in the early game. You spend that one turn just like you would for a Planeswalker, where you just commit to it, tap out, and, even versus control or aggro, it's good. Like, and that's the thing is, it's a main deckable card because unlike some planeswalkers, like, Jace Memory Adept, if you knew you were going to play control all day, you would slam that guy in every deck. If you knew you were going to play against aggro, however, it's kind of miserable. As opposed to Assemble the Legion, it's good versus both decks. Like, the control player's going, shit, I can't Wrath every turn. And the aggro player's going, well, I guess I'm never hitting you again. So, it serves a function that I don't think there's another card in Standard that does right now.
So, what are these at, Ryan, retail?
I believe it's only like $2 or $3. I'm not 100% though.
$1 TCG player, so there you go.
Yeah, I would be picking. I'm tempted to go very deep on this card.
I'm not far behind you there. Cause, yeah, I liked it, but I wasn't sure about it, and it was actually more miserable to play against than even I imagined. Cause I remembered stuff like Goblin Assault and how good that was in Limited. Like, we played Goblin Assault and Constructed, so. Yeah, I was inclined to think it was quite good, but I had it played against me a few times, and luckily both times I had that stupid white 5 thing that destroys, it exiles a creature or exiles an enchantment.
Yeah, the Iona's Judgment that they couldn't call in judgment because of the flavor.
Like, yeah, that card you had to play. I had that both times because, well, that's the extent of how lucky I got. Like, I finished like under 500 in every event I played in, but I had the removal for it, but I could just see visions in my head of that card getting way out of hand in just a few turns. It's limited, and there's limited ways to deal with it. Like, an army of 1/1s is just going to put you completely out of the game.
How would you combo this with, say, what's Lingering Souls, and then you could also do the Tangible Virtue?
Descent into Madness.
Ooh. Or you can even do 5 Alarm Fire.
Don't think you ever want to play this card as a combo with something else. You play this card because it will win you the game on its own.
Exactly. It's a planeswalker. Like, Assembling in the limited, obviously, testing that we have done thus far is pretty much a planeswalker versus both matchups. You either clear the board versus aggro to get yourself that one turn to be able to drop this, and then you just protect it and sit behind it, and that'll win you the game on its own, or versus control. You wait till that one turn where they tap out. Like, even if my opponent taps out for a Tamiyo or something, if I get to slam this and they slam Tamiyo, I'm going to win that race.
Yeah, it's like, cool, use your Tamiyo to tap one of my tokens.
No, that's the thing. They can't even tap the ones that come into play for the first couple turns because they have haste.
Right.
So
right.
They get to attack right away.
Yeah, that's fine. The only thing I could see is maybe if you wanted this as a finisher, you would probably want some way to boost the power and toughness of your tokens just so you don't get your pants pulled down by illness in the ranks, which I'm not sure if that's, yeah, I don't, I'm not, yeah, Jace too. I'm not sure if that's like a real factor, but you'll want something probably.
Tangible Virtue.
But it's more, Tangible Virtue could be a good choice. I think that's going to be more of a later metagame thing though. I think at first, nobody's going to be like, you know, nobody's running Jace right now. Nobody's running Illness in the ranks. Like, I don't expect these cards to see play.
Well, actually, the Esper control deck that barely exists, but still exists, is running Jace's. And I think the fact that they just had their mana base issues get practically solved overnight means that people are going to make a real serious go at the Esper control deck.
I think we should move on, after we kind of hash this out a little more. But I think you just play this in, like, Bant's Flash Red. And it's kind of like that finisher Bant needs that isn't Drown Yard to just close out the game. And then you're already playing a Farseek deck, so you actually can play this on turn 4 and then Wrath on turn 5 or whatever. So I think that's kind of a place for it.
So what you're saying is there's no shortage of potential decks to go in. So, well, like, I was worried it would have home, and we've managed to slot it in every deck there is. So, yep, I'm feeling pretty good about this card.
Yep, so that's my call.
All right.
Good one.
All right.
And we're Ryan.
And we've
Marcel's going to edit it, so it sounds like he came up with it.
I did. I came with everything.
Now, there's one other thing in Dragon's Maze we have not talked about. The premium basic land that will be given out at the pre-release. Anyone have thoughts on this? I assume it's going to be some sort of full art land or something cool.
This card could either be really expensive or not matter at all, and it's going to completely depend on how pimp it is.
Exactly.
Zendikars or Unhinged, then it's going to be very expensive. Because it sounds like it's going to be very limited quantity. And, like, think about it. If each person's only getting one, like, and you want to play 20 islands, like, hey, room full of 20 people, can I get all of your islands? Like, how easy is that going to be? No, you're going to end up having to go online to buy this card.
Yeah, and there's, like, foils, and, I think this may be the most expensive thing at the pre-release, if the foil copy of this, or however it works, like, this could be a big deal.
Could be.
I mean, or we could be totally wrong, and it could be like, I don't know, it's just so weird that it's a, you'd think if it's, they're making that basic land a promo, it just has to be insane.
Well, no, because you remember those, was it Arena League or whatever, and it had the DCI symbol for the expansion Arena. Symbol? Yeah. And they did those like two or three times, and those are worth like nothing.
Yeah, they're like $5.
Yeah, well, no, I feel like I just sold one of each. I sold a 5-set on eBay for like $12.
Yeah.
Like the one from 2005 or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
and they're $5.
Those aren't super expensive. So that makes them.
It could be on that level, which would be super disappointing. But why would they do that for a pre-release? That doesn't, you know, like.
It's just another thing. It's just one more thing. Isn't that what you get if your guild is the first to do your guild challenges or whatever?
Everyone who participates is what it said. I don't know if that's. It was ambiguous whether that's participates and wins, like your guild wins, or just participates, period. I'm leaning, like, I would think it's participates, like, at all. Like, similar to the, you know, tokens or whatever from the Hell Vault.
Yeah, that makes sense. Most likely be that way, the way it was written.
Well, I mean, these...
that would make sense, because they're trying to make...
Say, they're not super pimp, they'll probably be a buck or two.
Yeah.
Could be more.
But the thing is, like, they don't want to make... It's gotta be everybody who participates, because the whole point of a pre-release is to be super casual level, and they don't want to make it like, oh, all the grinders came in, picked a guild together, and just crushed through it.
By the way, Orzhov's the best guild.
It's really rock, paper, scissors, is what I found.
Yes, I mean, I
thought Demir was the best, but that was just because Orzhov couldn't beat it, and then when I picked Demir, I just, like, got my ass handed to me by Gruul, and then when I played Gruul, I got my ass handed to me by my mana base.
I mean, I 4-0'd the Midnight pre-release with Simic, which was difficult to do. Like, there were very good games, and Mystic Genesis won me, like, most of them. But then on Saturday, I did it with Orzhov. And, I mean, my deck was super good, but I think that was just because I was in, like, I mean, there's so much removal in white and black that my deck ended up being, like, you know, 3 or 4 Extort guys, 10 removal spells, Ghost Dad, and the promo. Like, and that was an insane deck. I never even lost a game.
Oh,
like,
man, you 4-0'd it. That means there was, what, 12 people at your pre-release?
There were 36, and I 5-0'd it.
Oh, okay. It's a little better.
Watch out for Corbin. PT.
Team Grinder.
It means nothing. Like, it's just a pre-release. But what I mean is that, like, my point was that when I played with Simic, a lot of my games were close, and, you know, I was fortunate to win. When I played with Orzhov, they weren't even close, because I felt like Extort was so powerful.
I was against Ryan, and, like, I was extorting the crap out of him. Ryan was at 3 life. And then he threw Gift of Orzhov on his stupid Consuming Aberration, and he milled me for like 20 and one attack.
In all fairness, I did have double Consuming Aberration, double Gift of Orzhov in that pool.
Yeah, he opened a regular Consuming Aberration too, so I dealt with the first one. He's like, oh, well, here's my non-foil, non-promo.
That's why I liked Orzhov so much. There's so much removal in those colors. Like,
yeah, you had to open well, but I had what I thought was the ideal Orzhov deck. Like, I couldn't have asked for a better Orzhov pool, I thought. And then I just scooped to, I lost to Demir 3 times in 4 rounds. Oh. And it was just miserable.
Did you have Ghost Dad?
No.
Because I had Ghost Dad, and that's the ideal pool.
I had High Priest Dependence, so High Priest Dependence I thought was going to affect more games.
I mean, that's like, good. Ghost Dad, there's no Ghost Dad to win you the game whenever you play it.
I blew Ghost Dad out twice. I lost to him once because I sat on 3 lands and had 2 removal spells in my hand that could kill him.
You might have beat it. You didn't blow it out because just by casting it, they're doing well.
I blew it out because he cast it. I killed it, milled him for 5, and then killed him next turn.
Well, like, sure. Like, so he played a big creature and you killed it.
Yeah, and that milled him. That helped. The only thing could have been better if you played the 9/9 Trampler because then he would have just died.
So how'd you guys like this pre-release compared to the Ravnica pre-release?
I was obviously miserable just because I couldn't fucking win a game to save my life.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this set's a little more luck-based on what you open. Like, it's a little more bomb-intensive than, like, Ravnica. You could deal with the bombs. And here, like, I mean, Ghost Dad, even just, like, the Rubble Hulk. Like, that card, like, sometimes you're just like, oh, bad player crushed me because he had Rubble Hulk. And, I don't know, like, you can't block everything as Demir. And, I don't know. I feel like there was a lot of games won through complete luck that I was watching. Like, I was watching really good players lose to really bad players because the bad players, like, had better cards. And although, yes, that always is going to happen, I feel like it was more intensive at this pre-release than I have seen in a while.
I felt Mill was unchecked. Like, if you've got a good mill pile, like, and if you had any amount of tempo and removal and you can make the game go longer than, like, 5 or 6 turns, you were just, there was no way for them to interact with you. Like, I had a guy dead on board and he milled me for 25 cards in one turn. I was like, this is real life? There's no card, like, no Eldrazi type effect. There's nothing, there's no, like, psychic spiral or anything like that. It's just, you straight up lose to mill if you can't kill them fast enough. So all the other decks are trying to beat each other through damage, and then Orzhov's kind of, Dimir's kind of like, well, I'm going to play a non-interactive game, and I'm playing against the number 40.
Yeah, and so see, and that's what everyone was saying, they didn't like how it was split, but I think had it not been split, and had Dimir been more mill, it would not even have been a fun pre-release. Like, Dimir would have just by far been the best kill. At least Boros had a chance to race it in time.
Yeah, so I felt like everyone else was playing a totally different game, and Dimir, if you opened the right pool, because I went Dimir and just got totally pooped on. I ended up building a practically Simic deck, but because I didn't open well. But if you open well enough and got enough mill stuff, you played a totally different game than everybody else, and you were practically goldfishing, and there was no way they could stop you besides killing you too fast. There was no cards you play that they could deal with.
How was you, Corbin? How'd you feel?
I enjoyed it. I know when we did Return to Ravnica, I raged about people having Grove of the Guardian because it was by far the best promo. I thought, this one, I thought the promos, the spread on them was fine. I didn't think anything was too powerful. Obviously the Gruul decks were very explosive. I mean, I had fun. I enjoyed it. I really liked the kind of the split between like Boros and Gruul trying to kill you through attack damage and like is the Orzhov deck trying to, you know, kind of stabilize, and then the Simic deck's kind of the tempo that's, somewhere between, you know, those two extremes. And then, yeah, I mean, Dimir was kind of the outlier. Honestly, I never played against Dimir, so I can't really comment as to whether or not, you know, that strategy was too strong. I mean, it is true that, you know, if somebody has the right mill pool, it's going to be very difficult to interact with, especially in sealed, where you're going to have slower decks, you know? I'd like to see how it works in draft. Because, like, and even in a regular sealed, if somebody doesn't have a Dimir guild pack, then, you know, maybe those, you know, a regular sealed event, the mill isn't going to be as strong as it was when people got a guild pack. So, I enjoyed it. I had fun. I liked Evolve as well. There was a really good tension, I thought, between, okay, well, I have, you know, my opponent's playing stuff, kind of growing his board, and I have a bunch of low dudes. Do I play this guy now that's going to evolve everything? Or do I play another 1-1 Evolve, and then next turn, you know, get to grow everything? So you're constantly facing that choice of whether or not you want to basically strand a low-cost Evolve card in your hand and build your team now, or do you think you can wait a turn and then build up more cards? So I thought that was pretty good tension there that made for good gameplay. I had fun.
Very skill-intensive, yeah. I actually really like it. I thought Experiment 1 was going to be playable and standard, and yeah. I actually like Experiment 1 even more now having played with the pre-release. And another card that confused me is, like, I really like Gyre Sage, however we're pronouncing that. I think that's probably only going to be good in Limited, but it was a real beating. Because I think Limited's slow enough where a card like that is actually just going to get you a ton of advantage. Like, it was a Jiraga Tree Speaker early, and then it switched into Tarmogoyf mode. And I really, really liked that card a lot more than I thought it was going to. So,
yeah. Any
time a card is just so much better than you thought it was going to be in Limited, you have to reassess its standard playability. And I'm still not calling Gyre Sage as playable in standard, but it definitely was a lot of fun to play with.
I really liked Simic. There are a few things I figured out when playing it. One is that Clawfin Raptor is obviously insane, and so is Croconura, because it's a very low-cost dude that's a great blocker and triggers a lot of Evolve. But then also, I think it was... I can't remember the name. It's the 2/4. It's actually a Gruul card, and it has Blood Rush. But 4
is... the centaur?
Yeah, 4 is the magic number in Simic. 4 on either side of the creature will evolve almost all of your guys. So having that 2/4 was actually insane for being able to evolve. Yeah, I really enjoyed Simic.
That's why Shamble Shark was so good, because you were just playing high toughness dudes, and you kept like getting him up to like 5 power.
Yeah, Shamble Shark was really good. Like, there was one game I was playing Orzhov, and it was like my closest match, and I pass on turn 2, and my opponent's like, yes, thank God. And then I just Shamble Shark to the end of his turn, and won because the card was sweet. I mean, I had Mystic Genesis, which is the counter target spell for 5 mana and put an XX slime into play, where X is a converted mana cost, and that card was the biggest blowout possible in Limited. It won me every single game I cast it, like, that I would have probably otherwise lost, but that card was so good. I'm really looking forward to drafting Simic, because I feel like you can make some really cool decks.
Now, what financially relevant would you say came out of the pre-release? Because I'm thinking that it was, I'm glad I bought in on Experiment 1. I think that was a good call. Is there anything that you guys think that, after having played with it in Limited, you think we should reassess its playability? Because I know stuff like, is it Staticaster, came out of Limited. So is there anything like that that you guys saw that you think we might want to reassess? Because I know we talked about Assemble the Legions and how seeing that get there in Limited that makes us want to reassess it. I'm thinking maybe I'll try a little testing with Gyre Sage, proxy it up, but I'm not expecting anything good.
I think Experiment 1.
Is there anything else?
Extort, to me, you know, we looked at it and we were like, okay, this is probably good, you know, whatever. And after playing with it, like, it was just crazy. It was so much fun playing Orzhov because it's exactly how I like to play Magic and not attack. And you just, like, extort, like, usually, you know, when you're playing the control deck, you start to stabilize around turn 4 or 5, and then you're kind of in the danger zone. Extort takes you out of the danger zone and then starts to win the game. And it really
is. You've got so much extra mana as a control player, too.
Yeah, like, it was so much, it was as powerful as we thought it would be, or more powerful, which, like, lends itself well to constructed possible cards like Blind Obedience or something. I mean, because Extort is not at all irrelevant, and like Blind Obedience, you know, that could be, you know, if that card was playable for its effect, the Extort is not going to be irrelevant. It's very, you know, if you get 2 to 3 life out of it, out of a game, and that's a burn spell out of your aggro opponent. So
it's not even a burn spell; it's a Lightning Helix.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and yeah, you're right.
So yeah, it's you know, that's not irrelevant.
I was thinking the fact that, you know, it costs them a lightning bolt out of their hand just to, you know.
Oh, kind of, yeah. That's
right.
True.
So, but yeah, I mean, you're right. It also makes it that easier to kill them.
But if you're a control deck, life equals time.
Right.
Like, life equals turns. It equals drawn cards. If you live long enough to draw more cards, like, I think if people want to play haste stuff, Blind Obedience is a really good pickup. I think, was it Marcel that called that?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I wasn't too keen on it before. I thought basically you were paying 2 mana for an extort enabler, and I still don't know if a card that is doing something irrelevant but has extort is going to get there. But I think if there's a lot of haste and we want to be using Blood Obedience, potentially it could be good. And the extort is just as good as it was in my wildest dreams. I'm really happy with it.
It's maybe better in Modern than it is in Standard. It stops the only 2 combo decks alive right now.
Well, it also
all the Pester Mites come into play tapped. Yeah.
Yeah, and Standard, it stops Ghost Dad, it stops Thunder My Hellkite, and it stops Falcon Wrath Aristocrats.
Hell Rider.
Ashling Zealot or Ash Zealot, Strangle Root.
There's actually like a Jund Haste build.
Yeah, Mangler.
Yeah, that was Drag Mangler and what's the Flint Hoof Boar. There's a lot of good haste stuff.
I mean, like I said, I think it's good in Standard. I think it's probably better in Modern because, like, it beats the crap out of pod decks. It not only gives you more time to, like, combo, but it stops the combo when they do, so they have to find an answer to it first. And then, yeah, I mean, it's good against the twin decks as well.
Plus it shuts off Spark Trooper, which is gonna be really relevant, I think, going forward.
Yeah, I mean, so there's a lot
I'm gonna break that card.
There's a lot of things, a lot of reasons to, like, Blind Obedience, I think.
Oh, and then I was playing, I got Moto Beta, and there's quite a few Boros decks there, and I will say Boros Charm is very scary, and Eloria's Fury is just alright. You really don't want to see the Boros Charm in their hand, where Fury is kind of like, oh, sometimes it'll blow you out, but sometimes it's like, hey, it doesn't get there. So yeah, that card is, again, I agree with our analysis that it's overhyped, and yes, that card is definitely overhyped.
Yeah. But Boros Charm, God, is that card good.
Oh, my God.
I bought those at, like, quarters, and they're, like, $3 already.
And Frontline Medic could be annoying, too. I didn't think he was going to be as good, but, you know, he can crash in there, and if you don't have that instant speed removal, he can cause some very unfavorable blocks.
Now, what are you jamming with right now? Is it anything with Mutilate?
No, actually, I got a 2 decks. I got an Esper Control deck that uses the Exquisite Blood combo, and is actually pretty decent. It goes off pretty well. I beat another Esper Control deck, grinded out to the last couple minutes. I was able to beat him with it. So
the deck. Now is that Exquisite Blood combo a win, or does it stall the game out? Does it make the game draw?
It's a win. It's a win. Instant win right away. And it's not too hard to hit it. I mean, all you got to have is Exquisite Blood out, and you you pop the Guild Mage and his ability and you get attacked.
But doesn't it make an infinite cycle of mandatory triggers? And if there's an infinite cycle of mandatory triggers, the game draws?
No. Since I hit zero life, state base effects are checked before the next one triggers and the game ends.
Oh, okay. See, I'm not about to take my rolls advisor exam anytime soon,
yeah,
so.
Don't do it. So, I mean, it was actually not bad. There's ways to make it happen. And then I got another deck with Master Biomancer and Lingering Souls, and that is pretty insane. It's like almost like bank control, but you got Lingering Souls and Sorin, and Master Biomancer, he makes a pretty impact the board pretty heavily. You know, Thrike Tusk comes out very nasty. You got Restoration Angel, this is Magic Christmas Land all over, but the deck has a lot of ways to get there. I was having problems against Boros with it, but we'll make it work. But there's definitely a lot of Boros going around. There's some Esper control going around. You see some people trying to do Mind Grind on a ramp deck, which doesn't really do it well, but.
I think we knew people would try to break Mind Grind.
But the standard looks healthy though. I will say that much. Like I think this is going to be a fun standard, and until someone figures out how to put Ghost Dad and Thrag Tusk in the same deck and grind you out to death, I think we'll be alright.
You really think Ghost Dad's gonna be that big of an issue, huh?
Yeah, I like Ghost Dad. I was playing with him. He's definitely impactful. If you got the right kind of deck, then like the control deck that you would put the Legion, the token card one.
Yes, Assemble Legion.
You would probably want to have Ghost Dad in there and probably be a bit more impactful than Assemble the Legion would be at 5. You would finish the game in the next couple of turns. Because if you think about it, if they're at 20, you cast them. You got 3 turns that you're going to kill them in essence. If you blink them and come into play, it's basically 3 turn clock that he has. And that's without anything else going in. I've seen, one Esper deck had Blind Obedience along with it, so they just grind it out, Lingering Souls, think twice, get them all them extra triggers out of there, Ghost Dad to finish it off, and it looks like there's definitely going to be a factor. He'll have a place. I don't see him dropping his price much. I mean, he's at 25 right now. I mean, he may go to between 15 and 20 with the flux, but I think he may keep his legs and be like 20, 25, maybe even go to 30 if they really make him that deck.
Interesting. Well, what else do we have to talk about? Anything else?
I mean, I think we're probably good, and Marcel wants to grab some of the stuff we talked about before we actually started to throw that in.
Yeah, I feel like we talked about a lot of good stuff before the cast, and then we just spent way too much fucking time on a bunch of garbage.
Yeah.
Do we want to do a what's it worth?
I think we probably have a good hour of stuff between the stuff earlier and the stuff now.
Yeah.
Marcel, like, no, if you need to take your time to define the best stuff, like,
I don't think we're going to rush this one out. Because, right. I mean, like, the prices have already fluxed, so it's not like we're going to be like, oh, God, you have to pick this up because nobody's noticed. Like, we didn't have anything where we're like, besides maybe Assembled Legion, but, I mean, I don't think anyone's going to notice that in the next 2 or 3 days anyway.
Yeah,
so, like, the only thing we had to say is, like, oh, shit, Reckoner went up, and it's too late to tell anybody. It's like, oh, you're going to wish you had already bought that.
Did you guys see the new legacy decks that have come up because of Gatecrash?
No.
No.
And by that I mean the one that kills faster than Belcher.
Are you talking about the turn?
Oh, you talk about the old spells, no land deck.
Whatever you want to call it. It's super
inconsistent. We've been testing it.
I mean, what is it? Prozac said it has the highest percentage of turn one kills in the format.
He's never heard of Spanish Inquisition then. Because there's a 0% chance it is faster than Spanish Inquisition.
He mentioned Spanish Inquisition in the article.
And he thinks it has a higher percentage than he's smoking.
He said it was like 40, maybe I'm making this up, I thought he said like 40% of the time you kill on turn one.
That's cool. Spanish Inquisition is over 70%, so.
Yeah, but Spanish Inquisition's, I've watched shit on Ryan, so it's pretty funny.
Well, sure, but this deck, like, 40% is not that high. You're not that much above Ad Nauz at that point. You might as well play Ad Nauz because it's way more consistent. Like the
Ad Nauz is 0% on turn one, though.
Yeah. No, Ad Nauz can turn one.
No.
Yeah, like 10%.
The Epic Storm or whatever can turn one, but Ad Nauseam, I mean, maybe it can, but it's not meant to.
Most of the time you're playing turn one.
It's turn one, yeah, but you can go like turn one, Lotus Petal, Dark Rit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you can. I mean, but that's, I mean, it's better. Like, I don't think these decks are good, probably. I mean, it's interesting.
That deck is not good.
That kind of shit, it's fine.
I mean, like, had Brainstorm gotten banned, then yeah, I could see another turn one deck come around. But, no.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of turn one or turn two decks, and it's whatever.
Yeah. If you're going for straight turn one, you just run Spanish Inquisition. It's by far the most consistent and best turn one deck. It's no different than this. Like, Force of Will is still going to push this deck shit in. Yeah. So, you might as well just run the deck.
Yeah, Force Will is pretty good against a deck with no lands in it.
Yep.
Since if they can't actually just go. They have plenty of pieces, but they won't have the mana for another, like, three turns.
Is there anything else you guys wanted to talk about? We should record an end to the podcast.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah.
Right, let's do that.
So we're going to try to piece this together. We're going to
Is there a segment we want to do, or do we just want to kind of just say, well...
I think we should just kind of end it. Bye. Yeah.
I always wrap it up then. Well, this is the end of Brainstorm Brewery. We'll be back next week after the prices have dropped. The release will be out. And I think we'll be upon a Pro Tour in 2 weeks, so we'll have a lot more exciting decks and a lot more financial information there, so stay tuned.
And as a last comment to the listeners, we are trying to come up with a name, apparently, for what to call the listeners, and right now Jason has appointed himself with the best name of Brew Crew, and up until that is dethroned, I believe that is what it will be, but if you have any better comments or suggestions, feel free to send them to us through email or on Twitter.
I think if anybody should name the listeners, it should be the listeners. So the best submission I've heard so far is the Brew Crew, but we're going to let this contest go a little bit longer, and hopefully that'll give us some time to come up with
contests. We need to have prizes.
Prize. Yeah. As I said, Brainstorm Brewery merchandise, which was mostly a joke alluding to the fact that all we have are those awesome custom tokens.
True.
To give out that we would give out anybody that asks for them anyway. This is not much of a prize, so we'll come up with something. So I'm going to let the contest go a little bit longer. I think there's a better name for Brainstorm Brewery listeners out there than Brew Crew. So let's try to come up with something good, and we'll on our end work on getting a prize to the winner, because
we
if
wish
they can,
we have.
Yeah, if they can beat Brew Crew, they deserve something.
And Shamble Sharks is not a reasonable submission. I've already heard that one.
There can only be one Shamble Shark.
Sure. Can be but one. Alright, well, I guess we will talk to you guys next week.
Later.
See ya.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.